Call the House Judiciary together 10 minutes after 1. We have with us today Representative Bob Neil Foster, Representative Ledoux, Representative Bob Lynn, myself, Representative Keller. Representative Millett is excused, and I suspect we'll have a couple more members. Representative Gruenberg has just joined us. And what we have before us today is just one bill, it's House Bill 173. And Representative Ledoux is the sponsor. I wanted just a little bit of housekeeping. We have HB 140 was on the schedule today, and that is being worked on, and there will be a new CS, and I will get it to the committee on Monday, it's been promised to us on Monday. And what I'd like you to do is to please, we'll announce this again Monday at the meeting, but please look at it closely and have any amendments that you see that you may want to do by Tuesday at noon, so we have the option of moving the bill, if that's what the committee pleases to do, on Wednesday meeting. And we're talking HB 140 here.
It would help me if when you email
Representative Gruenberg, did you have a question?
Fault.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, are you going to email that to us? If you do a little cover on that and give us the deadlines, then right now I don't even remember what anything is.
Okay, that's a great idea. I was actually struggling to remember what the guidelines was I was putting down, so I appreciate the suggestion.
And as I understand it today,
Representative Gruenberg.
Today is witnesses on this. We're not doing amendments.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you again. We're having, by invitation only, testimony today on HB 173. We were going to move it just before you got here, but we decided we'll probably hold it, and we'll have continue the testimony on Monday.
You know, it says It says something when we, both sides of the aisle, can laugh together.
That's true.
Through the chair, let's see if we're laughing, you know, in about 14 days from now.
We have a list of testifiers that the sponsor of the bill has provided us, and I'm going to let her go ahead and introduce the bill, and you can do it from there if you like.
I'll join my staff member here.
And then you could give us an idea who it is that's going to be testifying, okay?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gruenberg?
It would be of help to me if you have a list, if you could let my staff duplicate it, and so we all know who these witnesses are.
I do have a list.
Tonight. Miles?
My staff. Okay, Representative Ledoux, introduce yourself and your staff and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gabrielle Ledoux, and I am introducing House Bill 173, which is identical to Senate Bill 49, which is in the other body. I'm carrying this bill because I believe that there should be a definition of what a medically necessary abortion is. I see this bill as not a bill as pro-life or pro-choice, but rather this bill is a fiscal bill. In a time when our country is looking at ways to save money, I think it's important that we do the same for our state. Why should our tax dollars be spent on a procedure that is not health or life threatening? With this bill, we are simply giving a definition of what a medically necessary abortion is. House Bill 173 brings clarity to a previously unclarified term. And with that, I am going to go back to my seat and turn this over to my very able staffer, Harmony Shields.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Harmony Shields, staff to Representative Gabrielle Ledoux. I'm just going to go ahead and briefly introduce House Bill 173. And please note,
Harmony, sorry to interrupt. I just want to make state clearly for the record and for those that may be listening in online that today, again, the invitation is by invitation only, but I assure anybody that's out there listening and wants to testify that we will give ample opportunity to testify starting on Monday's meeting. Forgive me, but there was a somebody online and they were asking, and I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you, Harmony.
Sure. I'm going to go ahead and briefly introduce House Bill 173, but please note that we have lawyer Kevin Clarkson, who assisted with the legality of this bill, and he's on the phone available to answer any legal questions that you might have. We also have in the audience Chad Hutchinson, who had carried the bill for Senator Coghill, who can also help assist in some of the legal questions that you may have. Also on the phone, we have a couple doctors who are prepared to answer any of the medical questions that you could possibly have about the bill. HB 173 has really been years in the making and comes to us today after thorough, specific clinical review from legal and medical experts. It is important to note that we are not restricting women from having abortions. We are simply defining what a medical necessary abortion is. HB 173 is about bringing order to disorder. We acknowledge that Alaska has a constitutional guarantee to provide medically necessary care to all qualified people of limited means, including women requesting medically necessary abortions. HB 173 will amend Alaska Statute 47.07 to add a new section outlining a medical definition for abortions under payment of Medicaid. As Representative Ledoux had mentioned, why should our tax dollars be spent on a medical procedure that is not life-threatening? If I wanted to go in and have a cosmetic change done to my body, I'd have to pay for it myself, and it would be because it would not be considered medically necessary. A few years ago, I had injured my back, and after having severe back pain that was so bad I could hardly walk, I finally went into the doctor. And the doctor told me that I needed an MRI, but because it wasn't deemed medically necessary for this MRI, because all I was saying is I had back pain, I had to pay for the MRI, and through the results of the MRI, it showed that I had 3 fractures on my spine, and then it was deemed medically necessary, and every the treatment from then on out was then covered under Medicaid. So clearly, for other procedures out there, we do have a definition that is outlined, but for abortions, we don't. And with this bill, we're not restricting women from having abortions, but rather we're simply putting a definition out there what is deemed medically necessary for Medicaid-paid abortions. Chairman and committee members, I respectfully ask that you support the bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Ms. Fields, hearkening back to your back, and I hope it's better now.
Your mic.
Thank you.
Having had
Representative Grunberg, if you talk to the mic.
Hearkening back to your back, and I hope you're feeling better now. I've had back problems, and my sympathies are with you. Because of the definition there of medically necessary, in fact, it may have prevented you from getting coverage. Might it not have?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I'm not entirely sure I understand the question.
Representative Grunberg, do you want to restate?
Well, what I'm saying, and this is at the heart of the bill, the definition controls the access to the procedure, doesn't it?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, yes.
If I might respond to your question, and I would like clarification from the sponsor on this. As I understand it, the bill defines what an elective abortion is, and whether that controls the definition, you know, controls the situation or not, is really not what the bill, I mean, gets into. But by defining the term elective, then it just removes the confusion of what we may think an elective, in that case, MRI, might or might not be by whoever decides to define what elective procedure is. And this bill makes an attempt to define that, I believe.
But that was one reason that I would nominate Noah Webster for King of the World.
Okay.
He wrote the dictionary.
Could we, Representative Ledoux, I'm sorry.
I think the important thing is that through the chair, the important thing is that we've got definitions for every other procedure. I mean, she went in and because At that point, it wasn't showing that it was medically necessary. She had to go into debt, and she paid for it herself. I mean, not everything is medically necessary. It might be nice. It might be, you know, conducive, but that doesn't mean that it's either life-threatening or health-threatening.
If I may respond.
Before we do, though, just keep in mind that the, again, by defining the term, doesn't control whether or not somebody is able to get the treatment. It's just an issue about who pays for it. And that's a question.
But for
President Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But for some people, the only way to get the treatment, because they can't pay for it themselves, is if Medicaid covers it. So by controlling whether Medicaid covers it, for those people, it controls whether they get the treatment, right?
Good point. What I'm going to do is take a little at ease, and I just wanted to, what I'm doing, so you know, is I'm just checking with the sponsor to find out, clarify, make sure I know who's on the invitation for the testimony. Okay, so we're at Eddie's. Invitation only, that is not to restrict any testimony. We're just talking about the bill and getting it introduced. And if you called in today hoping to testify and you weren't invited, my apologies, will be putting you off. And I just wanted to confirm that the list that I had and gave to you, Representative Grunberg, was the right one, and it is, because there was others calling in. So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Grunberg.
I'm not sure it's appropriate for me to go down this kind of questioning, and I don't mean to sound like a lawyer. I'm sorry.
Representative Grunberg. If, for the benefit of those who have been working on the Senate, we're just a little bit looser in our procedures here than we've been. So what I'm going to do is go to Dr. Susan Rutherford online, if the sponsor is done with her statement, and we'll take Dr. Rutherford's testimony and ask her questions, if you like.
Okay. Hello.
Yeah. We have you loud and clear.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Thank you, Harmony, for contacting me. I was contacted because I had called in to testify when this was heard by the Senate committee. So I'm happy to discuss this here. First of all, my name is Dr. Susan Rutherford. I live in Redmond, Washington. I'm board certified in both OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine. And my almost 35-year career since medical school has included 12 years of active duty in the Navy, during which time I did both general OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine. And then I did private practice here in Kirkland, Washington, and most recently, almost last 5 years, I've been employed by the hospital as medical director, women's and children's services. I just left that position a couple months ago. I have a copy of Senate Bill 49. I understand that the wording is exactly the same. And I have several comments. First of all, in my almost 35 years of experience, almost exclusively doing high-risk pregnancy management, I've only had one patient, that I felt would die if the pregnancy were not ended, and that was a 16-week gestation. That was when I was in the Navy. None of us had the technical skills to do it, and she was actually medevaced by helicopter to a university hospital where they took care of it, and the government, the Navy, paid for all of it, which I feel is very appropriate. Secondly, almost all of the medical problems on the list don't require termination of pregnancy, so I don't think this list should be used to establish an expectation that compels abortion. However, most of these medical issues are associated with challenges that require a lot of careful management and good patient compliance and a lot of work during pregnancy and some potential risks to mother and or baby. I do think that the bill as worded accomplishes what is intended, although I would tweak the medical list slightly the following ways. Number one, I group the diagnostic list in a medically logical manner with similar organ systems or disorders listed together. Number two, I would delete kidney infection for which I could find no justification in the medical literature. and no support from any colleagues I questioned. In fact, it's the most common non-obstetric reason for hospitalization during pregnancy. Number three, I would add a maternal history of myocardial infarction. I would add gestational trophoblastic disease, and I would either add specify chorioamnionitis, which is a severe infection inside the amniotic cavity, and could fit into that category of infection exacerbated by pregnancy.
Mr. Chair.
So I'm listening to your first comments. First of all, regarding the back, this was a diagnostic test, and so this was something for which there's time, and there could be an appeals process. So I, you know, not knowing all the details and circumstances, in contrast, decisions about ending a pregnancy usually have to occur in a pretty short time frame. So the last part of the bill that specifies other physical disorders, I think you would need to set up a pretty expeditious review process, probably by maternal fetal medicine experts, and I know there are at least several there in Anchorage.
Dr. Rutherford, I'm going to interrupt you a little bit. We got a question, and is it okay if I
say... Can I say one other thing?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I just want to say, don't you already have a law that says that you will only pay for medically necessary, or is the question whether or not to establish such a law?
Chad, will you come up?
Okay.
But I wasn't cutting you off. You can have more time here to talk. I was just Dr. Gruenberg. Representative Gruenberg had a question, but first I'm going to let Chad respond to your question.
The Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chad Hutchison. I'm the staff for Senator Coghill. The answer is we do have a broad, vague definition of medically necessary, and we believe that the definition is so broad and so vague that elective procedures are being included under that definition, so we're trying to narrow the focus specifically to limit it to physical conditions pursuant to the recommended language by the Hyde Amendment and the 2001 Planned Parenthood case.
Thanks. And if you would stick around, I want to explain. Chad was testified on the Senate version of the bill and has been instrumental in doing a lot of the background on it. So Representative Gruenberg has a question for Dr. Rutherford, if you would.
Thank you, Doctor. Preliminarily, I'm the only Navy veteran in the legislature, so glad to have another.
Oh, hello.
Hi. And this is just a technical question. Your testimony was very good, very helpful, but when you were talking too fast, because I'm nearly 70, and I had trouble keeping up with you. You listed three things that you thought should be added. The first was myocardial?
Myocardial infarction.
Was that it?
Yes, a maternal history of myocardial infarction. That's basically a heart attack.
Right. And I've had some of those. And what was the second one?
I'm going to have to spell for you.
Say again?
The second one I need to spell.
Please.
So gestational, G-E-S-T-A-T-I-O-N-A-L. Second word is trophoblastic, T-R-O-P-H-O-B-L-A-S-T-I-C, disease. Now, many people wouldn't necessarily call that an abortion because it's an abnormal pregnancy that where the placenta is genetically abnormal, and most of the time there is no fetus. But occasionally there's a fetus. The fetus will never survive, but that needs to be there needs to be intervention quickly. So I thought that should be clear.
And how about
third one? I'll spell also. Okay.
Yeah.
Chorioamnionitis. C H O R I O A M N I O N I T I S.
Chorioamnionitis.
Yeah, C-H.
Right.
Charlie.
I hope I never get that in a spelling bee.
Yeah.
Please continue. Thanks for going back for me.
No, that's fine. That's basically all I had. My other things were just thoughts that came to me as I was listening. And that basically you already had some medically necessary definitions with regards to the Harmony's situation with her back. it sounds like. So they're basically looking to those rules. So the question is, are you going to, if you don't want any rules and you want all elective abortions paid for to improve access, then it sounds like you need to change that law. Since you have a law that has medically necessary, then it's a matter of trying to come up with a fair definition. And so from my medical standpoint, I'm trying to help this list be something that would be generally accepted in the medical community, that people would say, yes, that's reasonable, that's fair, because she has a reason to consider abortion. Yeah. Even though most of the situations listed are not life threatening.
Representative Grunberg has another question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Coming from a psychoanalytic background myself, my father was a lay analyst, I note the absence of any medical condition that could potentially, because of depression or whatever, be even life-threatening. But all of these seem to be strictly physical ailments. What do you think about adding something concerning the mental health of the mother, particularly if it can be shown a high likelihood that maybe a death would result or something if the pregnancy were not terminated?
Well, first of all, for the treatment of depression in pregnancy, we do use antidepressants, and we do recommend using those. The risk to the fetus is minuscule, and untreated depression can be dangerous, but it can be dangerous whether they're pregnant or not. It's not the pregnancy specifically that's the reason for a clinical depression requiring medication. There was a woman who testified that I listened to during the Senate hearing. Was it Dr. Coleman, I think? And who has done, sounds like she's done probably some of the world's best research on mental health and pregnancy. And the conclusions that she has and that other researchers around the world have are that it actually worsens their mental health status to terminate the pregnancy. So, you know, there are many, many medical situations that people still argue about one way or another. So I'm sure you'd find people arguing both sides, but there is the evidence seems to be leaning that abortion will only worsen the situation. So, you know, you have that category other. I think if there was one specific instance where there was a situation, then I think getting an expert involved who treats high-risk pregnancies, getting their opinion prior to approving it would be a reasonable way to go.
So I gather, if I may, Mr. Chair,
Representative Grimmer,
that what you're saying is if there is such evidence, it should be determined on a case-by-case basis through expert examination and testimony.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the doctor?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg?
This was very helpful, and I hope that she's going to stay on the line for a while anyway, in case we have to come
back. I will do that.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Before we go, Kevin Clarkson is online, and I think he'll reveal that he's had some history on this, and it goes back a number of years, and there's a nurse, Nancy, I think it's Benvenu, and I'll ask them to testify in a minute. But I first would like to ask Chad if you would. If we have given a comprehensive picture of what's going on in the bill and what specifically we may have missed that we'd like to get on the record early in this.
Mr. Chairman, yes, and maybe it would be helpful for the committee to hear kind of the background that went into the research and development of the actual
language
of the bill.
Please, that'd be great.
Okay. I want to back up just a little bit and just make sure that we all understand why we're here today. It's all about bringing clarity to a previously undefined term, as Harmony previously stated. There has been a definition of medically necessary, but no one has actually clarified what that actually meant. And the 2001 Planned Parenthood decision didn't do a very good job of giving us a clear answer. So that's what we're trying to do today. I believe that there might have been packets given to people. If not, we'll make sure that from the Senate side we can make those available that will help.
I got one.
To the chair, Representative Goomberg, you didn't get a packet?
I don't think so, did we?
Okay, well.
I'd have to see it. Sorry.
We'll make sure that those are made available to so they can understand the context of which we're occurring. The statutory foundation found in the House equivalent of SB 49 or the Act of Buying a Medically Necessary Abortion for the Purposes of Making Payments Under Medicaid is found using the foundation of the federal Hyde Amendment. And the Hyde Amendment is an important document. It's something you're going to hear a lot. It's basically a rider on the appropriations bill that occurs every couple of years with regards to limitation of federal funds on abortion. The most recent executive order dealing with the Hyde Amendment actually came from President Obama on March 24, 2010, and it was attached onto what's known as Obamacare. It's the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, and this is a specific quote, and we'll make sure this is available to all the committee members so they understand the foundational context upon which we have to be operating in. According to President Obama himself, he says that it is necessary to establish an adequate enforcement mechanism to ensure that federal funds are not used for abortion services except in cases of rape or incest or when the life of a woman will be endangered, consistent with the longstanding federal statutory restriction that is commonly known as the Hyde Amendment. So right out the very at the very get-go, we have to know that any bill that we propose has to have those foundational federal standards. We have to include exceptions for rape. We have to include exceptions for incest, and if it's life of the mother.
If I could, Jed, interrupt. Are all the states in compliance with that, as far as you know?
All right.
Or will you get in there if you were, just proceed.
Mr. Chairman, all the states except for the state of South Dakota is in compliance with that. I believe, and I'll get to that as far as the specific numbers. And one thing that should be clarified with regards to South Dakota specifically is that every state has different laws, and South Dakota is technically in violation of the Hyde Amendment right now. So we don't necessarily want to base our template off the outlier. We want to make sure that we're doing it pursuant to what the federal Hyde Amendment states and what the 2001 Planned Parenthood decision states, because that's the legal box that we're going to be operating in. So, yes, and I'll get into those specific statistics in a few minutes here. So from the very beginning, we have to have the federal foundation, rape, incest, and life of the mother. The Alaska Constitution also provides added protection, according to the 2001 Planned Parenthood case. So we incorporate that by the language found in this bill. It includes included but not limited to, and it includes the physical health of the mother. So there's rape, incest, and a life of the mother, and the extra protection is also the physical health of the mother too. And a lot of those provisions were taken directly out of the exact words of Justice Faye's 2001 opinion. That's why you see it categorized the way you do in the language of the bill. One of the things that we should be cognizant of is that as long as the conditions are based on neutral criteria directly related to the health care program, then we're safe as far as equal protection going forward. And that's some of the things we'll discuss in just a few moments here. We want to make sure this is absolutely clear from the beginning, too, that this is just about medically necessary abortions for the purposes of making payments under Medicaid. That's all we're trying to do. We're trying to determine between elective abortions and medically necessary abortions. We have good faith, reasonable belief that both are now being passed through under the current definition, and that's a fundamental difference to what Medicaid is about. You're not supposed to have elective procedures being covered under Medicaid. We believe that indeed is happening, and it is a large percentage of the abortions that we have today. They're purely elective. We can't have that under Medicaid. So let's be clear. Medicaid does not cover elective procedures, and Medicaid does not cover elective abortions. Medicaid is required to fund medically necessary procedures, and therefore it is required to fund medically necessary abortions. The problem is we don't know what a truly medically necessary abortion is under the current existing legal standards. So there's a few statistics that we have to take in context as we kind of go forward and look at the language of the bill you have in front of you. We have studies from the Guttmacher Institute, and we'll make sure these are provided to the committee as soon as we possibly can. And it basically outlines, you know, what state follows what standard. And Representative Keller, Mr. Chairman, this follows on your previous question, and it answers some of those portions. Currently, 32 states plus the District of Columbia just follow the federal standard. That's it. So that's essentially the Hyde Amendment, and they allow funding for life endangerment, rape, and incest. 32 plus the District of Columbia. There's another 17 states that fund all or most medically necessary abortions. One of them is Alaska, and it's done under court order. The court order is the 2001 Planned Parenthood case. The language of the Planned Parenthood case will be provided to you, but I'm just going to quote a section that Senator Coghill has taken consideration of. It's on the last page, on page 16, and I'll give you a quote for your own reference. The state, having undertaken to provide health care for poor Alaskans, must adhere to neutral criteria in distributing the care. It may not deny medically necessary services to eligible individuals based on criteria unrelated to the purposes of the public health care program. That's all we're trying to do with this bill. Neutral criteria based on recommendations by doctors, and mostly by doctors, as to its application with regards to whether it's medically necessary or not. That's the premise. So why do we believe this is all important? Why are we here? Well, I touched on it before. We believe that elective abortions are being covered under the current definition of medically necessary abortion. The reason why we believe this is because we have statistics. There's numbers from the Alaska Bureau of Vital Statistics. We'll make sure this is provided. The title of the document I'm looking at, it says Induced Termination of Pregnancy Statistics. This is for 2011. This is number of induced terminations by method of payment and age, Alaska occurrence 2011. The total amount was 1,627 induced terminations in 2011. Of that amount, 623 were paid for by Medicaid. That equates to about 38.3% paid under Medicaid. So what does that tell us? That, in theory, that should be only cases of life of the mother, rape or incest, or otherwise medically necessary. Okay, well, so we have that template. Now we look at another study done by the Guttmacher Institute, and on the Senate side, the Guttmacher Institute, we talked about the credibility, and they regularly assess and evaluate statistics related to abortion, and they're considered very credible with their statistics. I'm going to turn to a document for the people listening at home. The title of the study is The Reasons Why U.S. Women Have Abortions, Quantitative and Qualitative Perspectives. The table that I'm looking at is on listed page 114. It's on table 3. The title of that table is Percentage Distribution of Women Having an Abortion by Their Most Important Reason for Having an Abortion for 2007 and 1987. The portions that we saw that struck us as particularly fascinating is that one of the conditions says physical problem with my health. It was 4%. 4% of a physical condition, and then the other element was a victim of rape or incest. This is what the respondents are writing. It's less than 0.5%. So you have 38.3% on this side, and you have 4.5% on this side. So 38.3% were getting Medicaid under Alaska, and then according to Guttmacher, only 4.5%, if you include rape, incest, and physical conditions, were actually getting abortions because of those reasons, as the primary reason. So that's quite a gap. What does that tell us? Why is that important to us? If there's a huge gap, and there's a lot of elective procedures being covered under that 38.3%, we need to rectify that, and that's why this bill is here today in front of you. We're making clear distinctions between elective procedures and truly medically necessary procedures. That's why we have the conditions listed, and we can do it as long as it's based on neutral criteria directly related to the healthcare industry, and that's what we anticipate we're going to do. We've already heard various testimony from the Senate side. I've had national experts. We've had Alaskan doctors. And the expectation is probably on the House side. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Before we go to the questions, I want to first recognize that Representative Pruitt joined us a long time ago. He's with us. And also we have Representative Reibold in the audience. Now, you know that HB 140 is not being heard today. Yeah, and you're certainly welcome to come up and join us. We have Charisse is excused. I know your husband is here, and you may want to sit by him, and I understand, but you're welcome to come and join us if you like. So, anyway, Representative Ledoux.
I was just going to ask, isn't there some testimony from one of the Planned Parenthood physicians that anything that a woman wants is deemed medically necessary?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, that's exactly right. In fact, one of the questions proposed to the Planned Parenthood representatives is, can you define an elective procedure? Can you define elective abortion? Is there such a thing as elective abortion? And they could not give us a clear answer, which was telling, I think.
Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that I'd like to ask you, I was reading through the memorandum that is included, Representative Ledoux included, it looks like it's addressing Senate Bill 49, which this will be the companion to, but it was written by Brenna Bell and Clarkson. And one of the things that kind of sparked my interest is right now, who currently determines what is medically necessary? Where is that determination made?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, it's made with the doctor, and it should continue to be made with the doctor.
So the continue.
Please go ahead with the dialogue.
So I appreciate the opportunity to dialogue there. So currently, what guidelines do the doctors have to do that? Is it something that we have established, or Medicaid has established, or are they going basically off their Hippocratic oath and that?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, probably the department or one of the practicing physicians would be better suited to answer that than myself as far as the actual specifics. That'd be my recommendation.
And I would appreciate at some point being able to ask them that. That would be okay. Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions for Chad at this point? Seeing none. Thank you very much. I'm going to go to Kevin Clarkson online. Kevin, you've been there listening to the dialogue, and you've heard the discussion, and I know you have background on this issue. If you have comments for us, they're certainly welcome. I know you called in and said I'm here to answer questions, but I want to give you an opportunity.
Thank you very much, and thank you to the committee for letting me be here to talk to you today. I'm happy to assist if I can. Perhaps I have some things I can say to you. I've been listening to the discussion. In answer to Representative Pruitt's question, right now the determination of medical necessity is made by the doctor and the doctor only. The doctor certifies medical necessity or not. There is no definition, however, that the doctor uses other than his own medical knowledge. The problem that has arisen is that one of the most prominent abortion providers in Alaska, Dr. Whitefield, has testified three times under oath in three different abortion-related cases in Alaska that I've been involved in which he has said that he defines medical necessity to include any situation in which he determines that the woman's pregnancy is, quote, an affront, close quote, to her, which to him means she simply doesn't want to be pregnant. The pregnancy might interfere with her education plans, her work plans, her independence in the future. Those aren't medically necessary abortions. Those are elective abortions. He has expanded the definition so broadly that anything he certifies, any woman who comes to him without private funding to pay for the abortion, he certifies as medical necessity. He was asked in 2002 in his deposition how many times since 1985 he had ever had a woman come to him without private funding to pay for her abortion where he had failed to certify medical necessity so as to trigger Medicaid funding, and he could only think of about 10 times in those, what is that? That's close to 20 years. So that's the reason why the definition is necessary. But right now the determination is simply made by the doctor. Medicaid is a cooperative program between the federal government and the state government. Federal funding is provided. As Chad mentioned, there is the Hyde Amendment limits how federal funding can be used to pay for abortions. Medicaid only pays for medically necessary care. That's the prerequisite. So it's not a unique or some new concept that you're going to limit Medicaid funding to medically necessary care, because that is the only thing that Medicaid covers. That's found in our own regulations consistent with the federal program. It's in 7 AAC section 105.100. The department will pay for a service only if that service is medically necessary. So simply requiring that something be medically necessary is not a new concept. That's what the program is all about. The reason that the definition is, as I understand it, being developed now for abortion is because of the practice of the providers, which basically means everything is medically necessary. And the definition is being, and it must be done, within the context of what the Alaska Supreme Court has said is required under the Alaska Constitution. And there's been reference to the Alaska Supreme Court's decision in 2001 in a case involving Planned Parenthood. And what the state said, the state Supreme Court said in that case, was that if let me put it this way. Our Constitution requires that it treat pregnant women seeking medical care similarly if they are similarly situated. So a pregnant woman who is planning to carry her pregnancy to term is in need of medically necessary care for her pregnancy and for the birth of her baby. A woman who is pregnant and planning to have an abortion or desiring to have an abortion isn't necessarily in need of medically necessary care unless there is some medical condition that she has or about her pregnancy that makes the abortion medically necessary. So that's the constitutional prerequisite. What was at issue in that case in 2001 was that a regulation had been adopted which forbade the state from paying for any abortions through the Medicaid program, or at the time it was called the General Relief Medical Program, which was the program through which Medicaid funding was funneled. And the problem with that regulation was that it eliminated all abortion funding through the Medicaid program, even those which were medically necessary. And what the Supreme Court in 2001 did was it said, no, there is medical evidence that, and you've heard some from Dr. Rutherford herself, and the Senate has heard some testimony from Dr. Thorpe and Dr. Rutherford also, that there are abortions which are, in fact, medically necessary. And the Supreme Court heard a lot of medical, expert medical testimony in that case to establish that there are some medical conditions which make an abortion medically necessary. So those, under our Constitution in Alaska, because the state Medicaid program provides funding to women who are pregnant who want to carry their pregnancies to term, the program must likewise provide funding to pregnant women who have a medically needed a medical need for an abortion. So, what the court did not do, however, was it didn't provide a definition of what medical necessity is for an abortion, because it's not a constitutional issue to define that; it's a medical issue to define that. What the court did in that case was they summarized all of the medical testimony that they had received about the various medical conditions that would make an abortion medically necessary to basically say, look, it appears pretty clear that there are abortions which are medically necessary, to establish the point that there are some women who are going to need medically necessary abortions, so the state's going to have to pay for those if it's paying for childbirth-related care, which it has to under the federal Medicaid program. So the question then becomes, what is the state or the legislature entitled to do with respect to defining what medical necessity is for an abortion or not? Well, the state has the ability, according to the Supreme Court's decision, to define medical necessity for abortion so long as the state is using neutral criterion. And medical necessity, the court said itself, is a neutral criterion. So how do you define medical necessity in a neutral way? Well, you use what is standard, neutral medical terms and concepts. And so that's my understanding of why you're getting the medical testimony you're getting, is because this isn't a definition of medical necessity that, meaning no offense, but that a group of politicians are coming up with. Obviously, you would enact the law, the legislature would, but you're drawing upon medical expertise to define what medical necessity would be. From a constitutional standpoint, that is acceptable because the definition is related to the purpose of the Medicaid program itself, which is to provide medically necessary care. So I guess with that, what I would do is just ask you all if you have any questions. I'm happy to answer any questions, but my legal opinion is that there is no constitutional impediment to the legislature defining medical necessity for abortion, for which abortions will be paid for through the Medicaid program, so long as what the legislature does in drawing that definition is to draw upon standard accepted medical knowledge in doing so. And I think that's what you all are doing. So, thank you.
I have a question. You have so much experience in the field that maybe you can just enlighten me a little bit. But the Medicaid has an interest in states only paying for procedures that are legal under federal law. So I guess my basic question is why, where there seems to be an anomaly here in Alaska, why wouldn't the federal government respond? Just another way to say the question maybe, or ask the question is, if a state were to all of a sudden start using Medicaid funding for paying for facelifts and, sex change or something that is clearly and obviously elective, would there be federal reaction?
Well, I don't know if I can say what the federal reaction would be, but I can answer the question this way, perhaps. The program is a cooperative program. There's federal money in the Medicaid program, and there is matching state money that comes into the program. So the state certainly has the ability to control how the state money is used in that program within certain parameters. I mean, Medicaid is an entirely optional program, but once a state elects to participate, it has to comply with the requirements of Title 19 of the federal law. And under the federal law, there are certain things that the state has to pay for, one of which is childbirth-related care, pregnancy and childbirth-related care. And that's what creates the problem here, because what Alaska's Supreme Court has done is it has said, with respect to state monies, the Alaska Supreme Court has not ordered anything, and it cannot order anything with respect to how federal monies will be used in the Medicaid program. The court's ruling in 2001 was about how state monies in the Medicaid program will be used, and they have said that because you are paying and you're required to pay for childbirth and pregnancy-related care using the federal monies, you have to use the state monies to pay for medically necessary abortion care. And I want to emphasize that there's no way to reasonably read the Alaska Supreme Court's 2001 decision to require anything other than the payment for medically necessary abortions. The court used the phrase medically necessary 34 different times in its opinion, and the court specifically said this case does not relate to elective or non-medically necessary abortions. So I hope that answers your question, Representative Keller.
It does. Thank you. I would appreciate if you stick around. What's going to happen? We have one more person that was invited to testify, and we'll go to her, and then there'll be some dialogue interaction here in the committee, and then we'll close down. We'll open up for more public testimony if there's anybody else out there that wants to testify on Monday. And so if you can stick around, it'd be helpful. I sure appreciate your being there.
Yeah, I'll stay.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux has a question for you.
I'm kind of curious why, after the decision, the Planned Parenthood decision came down, that the department that was administering the Medicaid didn't simply come up with regulations which are similar to this bill that we're doing right now. I mean, there's been quite a gap.
Is that a question for me?
Yes.
Don't you want to speak for the department?
Well, I can't speak for the department, but I can speak to my knowledge about that issue, which I do have some, but it's not extensive. My understanding is that there were some efforts to draft what would be a regulatory definition of medical necessity along the lines of what House Bill 173 and Senate Bill 49 are doing. But those efforts essentially didn't get anywhere. I don't know the explanation for why they didn't get anywhere. I just know that there were efforts, but they didn't come to fruition.
I guess my question to Mr. Clarkson was really, was there any legal impediment keeping the department from doing that?
Not in my opinion, no.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Kevin. Nancy, is it Benvenue? Am I saying it right?
It's actually Benvenue.
Okay, sorry. And I'm not sure. I'll try again. We'll just to use your pronunciation. But if you would to introduce yourself, and I know, again, you were invited to testify, and you indicated that you were on for questions. But after hearing the dialogue, maybe you have a comment?
Yes, I do. And the testimony that's already been stated has been extremely helpful. And
if you would again state your name, your full name, and
yes,
who you represent. Thanks.
Absolutely. My name is Nancy Bienvenue. I'm in Fairbanks. I am a registered nurse, and I'm the former CEO of the CareNet Pregnancy Center of the Tanana Valley, which is a faith-based nonprofit that offers life-affirming assistance to women facing unplanned pregnancy. That is my background. My being a registered nurse, I have worked since 1977 in women's health, in labor and delivery, and obstetrics and such, and I have a great deal of experience with that, as well as being the CEO of the center. And I also have personal testimony to share about this. In 1975, I chose abortion for my first child, and that was quite a long time ago, and it was in the state of Texas. So that connection is quite far. However, I went in there expecting to pay for my abortion, and I was a nursing student at the time and living with my mom, and they told me, oh, no, you don't have to pay anything. The state's going to take care of it. And so, you know, I have some personal experience in that, and I recall being utterly shocked that the state would pay for something that I didn't expect it to and that I didn't need for it to, but of course I went ahead and let the state pay for it. And that really is what I wanted to comment on and testify on, is that elective is elective. I mean, there are, I really appreciated the statistics that Chad put out, that there, I believe, 4% are medically, for a medical reason that the woman states, and then another small percentage is perhaps for rape and incest, and the rest are because the woman is maybe financially troubled, you know, not married, and so whatever reason she has that makes her want to end this pregnancy. Those reasons are reasons that are elective, and I've been there. I've experienced that. And the notion that a physician would say medically necessary is anything that is an affront to a woman's life or health, that is making a mockery of the legal system, because the wording is in the law. The words are in the statutes, whether it's the Hyde Amendment or the 2001 decision here in Alaska. And if you treat those words with such disrespect and disregard and completely mock those words and mock the legal system by making such a statement and using taxpayer dollars to fund these elective procedures, you know, it's just really a sad day when that is happening. And sadly, that's been happening since Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton. You know, we've been living with this, and it's really, in my thinking, it has been time to make this definition long since. You know, this should have happened so long ago at the inception of, you know, this woman's right to abortion. But sadly, you know, there is a woman's right to abortion, but the right to have taxpayers pay for the abortion is not there because of the law. And that is what I am stating as a nurse. And I have seen many women come through our center who receive a diagnosis of pregnancy, because that's what we do, and then we offer, you know, help and resources and assistance. And sometimes they choose abortion, and they don't state that they're in any kind of trouble financially, yet they make references to going on and receiving what's called now kid care, where they can then go and abort their pregnancy. I don't have numbers for those, but I have seen that happen. So that's from which I speak.
Any questions for Nancy? I see none right now, and I thank you for your testimony. I just want to know if anyone on the committee has questions that you want to raise or put on the record, and or the last comments.
I just want to ask, I think it's Dr. Rutherford who's still on the line.
Dr. Susan Rutherford?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, you can stay clear. Pardon me?
I am on the line.
Thank you. So, as a physician, Dr. Rutherford, you can state clearly that there is such a thing as a medically necessary abortion, and I think you've given us a couple of examples of those, and a non-necessary abortion, correct?
Yes, there is that distinction. And it's curious that so many are going through the system, because when we do medical billing, we have to attach a diagnosis code to every bill, and it sounds like they have not expected that diagnosis code for the abortion procedures, because that would reveal whether or not it was medical or elective.
Thank you very much.
And if it was not medical, if there was not the medical records to support the medical, and you were billing it under an erroneous diagnosis code, then you can be prosecuted for fraud.
Thank you.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we know if Planned Parenthood intends to testify at any of the hearings?
Representative Foster, we could ask the sponsor, but I'd be very surprised if they didn't. It's open for testimony, and I'm sure that today's discussion will alert both those that are supportive and those that are against. And
thank you.
Yeah.
Through the chair, I'd be pretty shocked if Planned Parenthood didn't come and testify.
Right. Thank you. Chad, I have one more question for you. I just, just to see how you respond to this. Do you think there's a psychological condition? If a woman has a psychological condition that is very extreme, you know, a mental a situation that is, on the extreme end, could a doctor prescribe an abortion if this law goes in effect? Or what conditions could the doctor use in the legal language to justify an abortion if he or she determined it was the psychological ailment, whatever it was, is sufficient enough that it endangered the life of the woman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Chad Hutchison from staff of Senator Coghill again. It is our fundamental belief that mental and psychological conditions should not be included under the definition of medically necessary. The reason why we believe that is because of the testimony that we've received on the Senate side from a plethora of experts that have all stated that mental and psychological conditions should not be included in the definition for medically necessary abortion.
And I would ask that in a future meeting, if we could make sure that those experts are there, so that we can continue this discussion. The testimony you have and other, because I think that will be an issue. Representative Foster, then Representative Ledoux.
Oh, that was going to be my question. Thank you.
I was going to say through the chair, I think that Dr. Rutherford testified that with, at least with respect to depression, that there's research that indicates that an abortion would exacerbate that as opposed to doing the opposite.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, Dr. Coleman also touched on that, and we had extensive testimony on the Senate side to hear her studies regarding that very issue. Yes, ma'am. Great.
So, seeing no other questions or comments, are you happy with your wrap-up where we're at, Representative Ledoux?
That's fine.
Okay. Well, we'll put this bill aside. We'll come back to it Monday, and thank you very much. We're adjourned at 2:00.